ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you. You are Vaishnavas, and you are the most worshipable of all in the universe, and you're very dear to Lord Krishna. And I'm very honored to be here today to be with all of you. Hare Krishna. So, when I was walking in India recently, because it's one of the things we do while we're there at a holy place, one of the holy places that I like to go every year is in Vrindavan. And it's a place called Govardhan Hill. It's a hill that Krishna lifted when he was just a small child. He lifted it up on his little finger and held it aloft for 7 days to protect all the residents of Vrindavan from a rainstorm. It was a huge storm. And that hill has become a place of pilgrimage for millions of people. They come there from all over India mostly and all over the world. And one of the ways of showing respect to the hill, worshipping Krishna, is called Padasevanam. It means to walk around the hill. And it's a beautiful walk. It's beautiful around Govardhan Hill. There are some places that just the pathway is very smooth and other places it's a little rougher. Generally we walk around in our bare feet because there's a kind of spiritual current that runs around the hill. And when you walk, then that spiritual current comes up through your feet and into your heart. So you don't want to block it too much. Go on bare feet, try to pick up on the spiritual current. And one day when I was walking, I stepped on a little screw. Didn't hurt my foot at all. It was just lying there. And I picked it up and I thought, what a poor little thing, lying here with no engagement. It's a kind of looked a little forlorn to me, that little screw. So he had no connection, and I picked him up, put him in my pocket, because I had remembered something that Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, had said, and that is that when a screw is connected to a machine, it becomes very important. It has a job to do. Screws can do really important work. They can hold things together so the machine can work properly. Even though it seems like a very small part it plays when it comes out. And I remember this when Prabhupada told the analogy of the screw, because when I was in junior high school, as kids we liked it when the teacher would show a movie, because that meant we wouldn't have to listen to her so much. The show a movie, it was just kind of fun. Kids like movies. And back then it was a rare thing to have a movie. So back then, kids, they used to have what they call movie projectors. They didn't have fancy high-tech machines like smartphones and other things like that. They just had projectors and you had to pull a screen down and then there was actual film that would go through the in front of a light. And then it would project onto a screen. Does any of this sound familiar? Oh, okay. And so we'd all get excited as kids when the movie would come in. It would be educational film, but at least it was a movie. It seemed a lot more fun than just listening. Connected from the screen, then it's just a little screen. Over it, and mud would come, it would get submerged in water, just sit there getting a little rust on it. Poor little screw. I felt bad for him. And I started thinking about myself. I should feel bad for myself. So many years disconnected from Krishna, like a little screw. But if that little screw, if you can imagine, could find its machine, if that little screw, out of. I have no idea. And the nourishment starts to course through your veins. And if you were a little cranky before, if you get cranky, if you don't eat for a while, if you're overdue to eat, anybody? Yeah, my wife's here, she'll attest. It's like, oh, you need to eat. And it's like, I eat, and I go, yeah, I'm fine, I feel great. Oh, yeah, you're happy again. And so this, the way this biological machine works, it needs to have some nourishment, some food. And you know it for yourself. You feel it directly. So in the same way, when one practices a bona fide spiritual system, one will feel nourished. One will see for oneself the Supreme. And naturally, one will also become detached from things that are not needed. There's a way in which I may in this world pick up what we call bad habits. Has that ever happened to anybody? Yes. Thank you. Did you ever think where you got it from? Sometimes it's hard to tell. Sometimes you can find a direct cause, but sometimes you may think, like, all of a sudden I find myself engaged in a bad habit, something I don't want to do. And it's rather strange, too, because sometimes the intelligence will say, this isn't a good idea. And then the mind and the senses will say, that's all right, I'll do it anyway. Does that sound familiar? You know, somebody may be trying to watch their weight, and then they walk past the refrigerator. The next thing they know, they're sitting there at the kitchen table with a half gallon ice cream and a spoon, and they look down and they go, it's half gone. What happened there? And the senses, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, can drag away even a person of great learning. A person can be very learned and even well practiced in certain systems of yoga, and then suddenly the mind drags one away. In the Bhagavatam, it's compared to a wild animal. Sometimes people, maybe they have too much time in their hands or too much money, and they go out and get themselves a wild animal. Have you ever seen this? It's like, I've got billions of dollars, what should I do? I'll get a wild animal and bring them home. What kind of animals do they get? Like a leopard or something? Bring in their house. And they raise them and everything like that. But the Bhagavatam says, so a person gets a wild animal, maybe they keep him in a little cage, take care of him, and then after a while they think, oh, he's pretty friendly. We really like him. He's part of the family. So they leave the cage open, go to sleep in the morning. Everyone the whole house is torn apart and everyone wakes up dead. So Bhagavatam says, that was from my high school, a friend of mine wrote a little thing, a poster for No Smoking Week, says, smoke in bed, you'll wake up dead. But the animal gets out and he kills everybody unexpectedly. And so a similar way, the Bhagavatam says, you can't trust the mind. You have to be very careful in the practice of yoga, because at any time the mind can turn on one and become like that unrestricted wild animal and just push us in a direction that we weren't expecting to go. It's very dangerous. So yoga is serious business, and ultimately it means to be able to control the lower self by the higher self. And Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, that we have a lower self and a higher self. I'll say the Sanskrit because it's rather beautiful. It says, Indriyani pranyahur indrebhya paramaraha manasastu parabudhir yobudhe paratastu saha. What Krishna's doing here is he's naming a hierarchy, showing a hierarchy. So he says, lowest of all are the senses. You can notice too that you have senses. They're mostly grouped up here. A lot of them are up here. You notice that? On this robot we have here? You know you're driving around in a robot right now, right? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a biological robot. That's why you take biofuel regularly to feed it. Did you have any biofuel today? Good. So the senses, we have senses, working senses, we have knowledge-gathering senses. And so that's what this little robot is. It has all these senses, and they're really interesting, because if you look at the eyes, try to look at somebody's eyes right now, see what happens. Anybody looking back at you? Did anybody looking back at you when you looked at them? How do they do that? I mean, if you're driving on the freeway and you look at somebody as you're driving by, they'll look at you like, what? How do you do that? You're projecting something. I mean, the senses are powerful because we're sentient beings and we have some spiritual potency that's coming from us. And they come out of the senses. The senses are very high-tech. And they're instruments, but they take in information in particular ways. Like these senses on the robot are particularly built, they're designed to take in light. And it's very intricate how the eye is built. Any eye doctors in here? Anybody studying physiology? Where's Nikki? She's studying for her boards. She can tell us. But there's all these, little apparati that pick up light in a certain way. They put it into an optical nerve, and it sends a stimulus to your brain, and then you can interpret it in different ways. But it's actually phenomenal. And then on the ear, I mean, notice your ear. Did you ever notice your ears? Or you just take it for granted? I have nice ears. But actually, they're really weird. If you notice, ears have all these little channels in them and everything. Those are meant for picking up sound from the environment. Did you know that? Just take a look at somebody's ear, but not for too long. Did you see that? They pick up sound vibration. If you cover the top of your ears, you don't catch all the sound. It's actually well designed. I know this because sometimes if it's cold and I wear a cap, a little, wool cap, and it goes across the top of my ears, I can't hear the mantra when I'm chanting perfectly. So I have to put it above my ears. So these little, like satellite dishes can catch everything, all the sound. But how's that working? Because the vibration goes in here, and then there's little fibrous material in there, and they're like tuning forks. And since there's no doctors in here, I can just make up whatever I want. And they vibrate in a certain way, and then it sends an impulse to a nerve, and it goes to the brain. We interpret it in a certain way, and yeah, we're saying I'm hearing sounds, and the hand, the ability to feel, that's uncanny. Also, you could be driving on the freeway. Say, I need my glasses, and then your hand reaches back into the bag. You can't see with your eyes whatever, but your hand's going like this. It goes, no, no, that's my chapstick. That's a handkerchief. That's a book. It's like, oh, there's my glasses. How does he know that? That's amazing, isn't it? It can feel, those are glasses, that's a book, and so forth, and just bring it out. So these senses, they're actually in the lowest position. And then he says, above the senses is the mind. So the mind helps to take in this information that's coming, this impulse is coming from the senses. And above the mind is the intelligence. The intelligence has a discriminatory factor. And above the intelligence is the Atma. Everyone say Atma. The Atma is the actual person. We're all people. And what is that? A sentient, living entity called the Atma. And that exists above the senses, above the mind, above the intelligence. And even above the Atma is what's called the Paramatma. Or as Prabhupada writes in the purport, is called the Super Spirit. That's another person, that's Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I'm within the heart of every living being. Every living being, whether it's an ant, or a man or a woman, or a tiger, Krishna's there next to the Atma, who's the actual person within that particular biological machine. So, he then says that there's a way in which there's a lower self and a higher self, and one has to learn through developing one's spiritual intelligence to discriminate between activities that are good for us and those that are bad for us. So it says, evam buddhi param budvasam stabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatram mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. He says, therefore, one should learn to use one's intelligence, the instrument of one's intelligence, purified intelligence, to control the lower senses and the mind. And this is a part of the yoga process. And we'll talk just in a minute about how one can develop one's spiritual intelligence and have it be purified enough so that it does the work that we need it to do so that we can not become entangled in the world. Do you have enough air in here? You're okay? The temperature's okay? Air's all right? Okay. Everyone happy?
Yes.
Okay, good. So before I go on to the next part, we'll take a few reflections. It means anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind. Any point that you heard that you found useful or interesting. And a reflection is not a question. A question has a question mark at the end and I have to answer. But a reflection just means what you heard. You're just reflecting back what something that you heard, one point. Let's try a few. Janardhan.
I really liked the part about the energy around Govardhan Hill.
He liked the part about the energy around Govardhan Hill. About how it absorbs up into your heart. Nice. Yes. He's reflecting back that about the little screw being part of a big machine. It's just a little screw, but it helps the whole machine function properly. And when it's detached, then it's just a little screw. It's not valuable. Thank you. Yes. The body is? It's a biological robot. And you need biological fuel to make it go. Nice. Yeah, so he's quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, Yantra Rudrani Maya. Yantra means machine. It's So Krishna's saying that the Atma, the soul, we're riding in a machine. Yeah. Thank you. Very good. Yes, Neil? Thank you. Yes, just he's reflecting back about the process of analyzing the hierarchy, the lower self and the higher self, including the senses, the mind, and the intelligence, and how much so one needs to understand and study the science of the self, what's even beyond the intelligence. Yes. Krishna resides with each living entity, with each person next to right next to the Atma. He's always with us. That's really important, isn't it? Okay, Krishna says it a few times in the Bhagavad Gita that I'm in everyone's heart. And in one of the cases, he says that I provide remembrance, knowledge, and intelligence. And I'm the source of knowledge and forgetfulness also. So Krishna is there assisting us according to our desires. This is a very interesting part of our philosophy, that Krishna's helping to fulfill whatever desires we have. He's there facilitating us in different ways. It's pretty much a universal knowledge that God's within everyone's heart. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, there's very specific information about the way in which Krishna, or God, is within everyone's heart. And how he interacts with us in different ways. Can I talk more about it? Sure. Well, Krishna says in the Gita, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. So that means that I'm the best friend of every living entity. There are different kinds of friends, and there are different words in Sanskrit for friend. Some are friends by obligation. Do you have any obligatory friends? Like sometimes relatives are like that. So you go home for a holiday because you have to. It's like, yeah, I like you guys because you're my family even though I hate you. That's one kind of friend. And there are other kind of friends that are temporary friends. You know them for a little while, then you separate from them and never meet them again. But the best kind of friend is called Suhrit. Everyone say Suhrit. So Suhrit means Krishna. He's the best friend. And he goes with every living entity. We're part of Krishna. We're a small part of Krishna. Just like when you look at the sun, you can notice that the sun has various parts. And the rays that come from the sun are parts of the sun. They're the same in quality. The sun rays, they have their own effulgence. Sun molecules coming from the sun. Just as the sun. But the sun ray, even though it's part of the sun, is a separate entity. It's considered separate. But at the same time, it's connected. Simultaneously, it's connected and disconnected. But it has the same quality, but it's different in quantity. So the sun ray can't do the same thing that the sun globe can, the entire sun itself. And the Atma, the living entity, is compared to the sun ray. We have the same quality. We're connected to Krishna. So nitya nitya sambandha prakritischa parayavasa. This is a verse from the Brahma Samhita. Actually, recently, Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from the great state of Hawaii, Aloha, gave a talk at a Muslim university, and she was talking about the universality of religion, and she quoted this verse that went out to the Associated Press and everything else. She was quoting from Brahma Samhita. She said, "Sanitya nitya sambandha prakritischa parayavasa," and that means that every soul has an eternal kinship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a very intimate relationship. Krishna loves every soul, and every soul has it. process by which we rekindle that knowledge of our relationship, it becomes reawakened. And nitya siddha krishna prema sadhya kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chitte kara udoy. This one verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita also talks about the heart. It says that that potential for love for Krishna is always there within the heart. It doesn't have to come from anywhere external. It simply needs to be revived. And then one can experience for oneself that relationship. Yeah? Follow-up question? In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a description of Atma. No, not exactly. It's the Atma is said by the Upanishads to be resting on different types of airs within the body. Yeah, it's we're within the body. We're suspended within this body. We have a certain obligation to stay in a body for a certain number of years or breaths, and the soul is said to be suspended within the heart by various kinds of airs that run within the body. Yeah, it's within the heart. It's within the region of the heart. But consider also that it's a non-material entity. It's not like having an actual physical element, because the soul is categorically different from matter. So this is an important point that you brought up. Krishna names different kinds of energies. There's lower energy and higher energy, and this is very useful information. In the 7th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Bhumir apor analo vayu kamano bhudirevacha ahankara ityame binna prakritirashtada. So he names earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So these are what are known as the gross and subtle material elements. What are they? Yeah, and they're called the gross, material, and material, gross, and subtle elements. But they're decidedly material. They're part of the material energy, which is a lower energy. And how do we know this? Because in the next verse, Krishna says, Apareyamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. It says, besides these that he just named, there's a higher energy. And that higher energy is the Atma. And it's categorically different. You can't describe it with a material calculation. For instance, in physics, those who study physics for some time have been trying to make an equation that will describe consciousness, but it can't be done. There is no material equation, no mathematical equation that describes consciousness, because it can't be measured by the same instruments that we measure the material energy, because they're two different kinds of energy. And for just a summary of that, when this is the part I'm saying is important, there's lower energy and higher energy. So when one higher energy, lower energy, one result, higher energy, another result. It's different, right? And so there's, as I'm repeatedly saying, there's a way in which, bhakti is a way in which to stay in touch with the material energy, the spiritual energy. Sorry, I got distracted and I made a misstatement. Okay. So, time goes by fast, doesn't it? When you're having fun. Anyway, there's always another opportunity to keep this going. We do this all the time. You just get together and we read from the Bhagavad Gita or discuss it, and it's useful, it's helpful. And this is one of the ways in which one can advance very quickly in the process of yoga, is whether you have a small group or a large group, is to come together and read from these books. This is the Bhagavad Gita, you can read from that. Srimad Bhagavatam, you can read from that. Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a lot to read from. That higher energy that I'm talking about, it comes nicely packaged in books. It just looks like a book, but a book is actually a container. It holds a certain kind of energy. And there are, of course, books that have lower energy and higher energy. So this has the highest energy of all. It has codes inside, these writings. And when you read them, it releases the higher energy. It is actually part of the higher energy. So if you just hear from it regularly, you'll expose yourself to the higher energy and you'll feel the difference. So Krishna consciousness is a simple process, just to summarize. That is, when one is connected to Krishna, one feels satisfaction and happiness. And when one is disconnected from Krishna, one feels dissatisfaction and? Right. And that there's a practical way that one can always connect to Krishna, even while one's living within this biological robot, which is a kind of a confusing situation because I'm spiritual, but I'm living within a material environment.
Hey!